Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is Matt Spiegel, and we are off and running with Season 2 of the PBP, Voices of Baseball. The very best play-by-play voices in the game talk about their craft. Hear guests like Joe Davis explain the thought process during baseball's biggest games.
You got to widen the lens. What does this home run mean?
Harper, the swing of his life!
Incredible broadcasters sharing great stories from your favorite teams with new episodes weekly. Find us on the Odyssey app or wherever you find podcasts.
Live from the palatial yet not overly ostentatious studios of CBS Sports Radio here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor of 345 Hudson Street. Welcome on in to what is a Thursday edition of the Zach Gelb Show across all great local CBS Sports Radio affiliates, SiriusXM, Channel 158, the free Odyssey app, and of course streaming on YouTube, youtube.com/CBS Sports Radio. 855-212-4CBS is number to jump on in, 855-212-4227, and you could always get at me on Instagram, where I'm straight flexing, or via the good old cesspool of Twitter, at Zach Gelb. That's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. I got Moist Mike, I got Stuart Kovacs. They're all rocking and rolling with me until we say goodbye to you at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. We'll have three guests today. Darius Robinson, the Missouri defensive lineman, who is projected to be anywhere from a first to a second round pick. We will be joined by Kyle Tucker, who covers the Kentucky Wildcats for The Athletic. And then the final hour of the show, we will do a mock draft with Chris Trapasso, who covers the NFL draft and all the prospects for CBS Sports. So a whole lot to do today, but let's start with the somewhat surprising news out of Lexington. I kind of thought yesterday we were going to get an announcement that Scott Drew was going to leave Baylor and he was going to be the next head coach of the Kentucky Wildcats. Well, earlier this morning, we got the big time news that Scott Drew has informed Kentucky and has informed Baylor that he will remain as the head men's basketball coach of the Baylor Bears. So Scott Drew is out. And now when you look at this past hiring cycle, I can understand Scott Drew saying, yeah, I don't want to leave Baylor for Louisville. I could get that one. But when you don't leave Baylor for Kentucky, that's now the end of at least me seriously considering Scott Drew one day leaving the Baylor Bears. And I understand the emotional attachment that Scott Drew does have to the Baylor Bears. I am fully cognizant of the program that he took over and how it was in peril because you had a player murder another player and no one ever thought Baylor was going to be successful again. And all Scott Drew has done has pumped out pretty much 20 plus win seasons. And oh yeah, by the way, he won a national championship in Waco, Texas. So with how long he's been there, with how in a sports term, he is a godlike figure for the Baylor Bears, and he doesn't have a lot of pressure on him, and he could be the coach there until he no longer wants to be the coach there, I could see why he elected to stay. Personally, I was hoping he was going to go to Kentucky, even with some loud vocal minority fans that were basically of the Wildcats saying they're too good for Scott Drew. And like, oh, Scott Drew, why the heck are you going to bring him? He has a vanilla personality, which I rolled my eyes, and I think I've made my opinions on Scott Drew potentially succeeding at Kentucky very clear over the last few days. So Scott Drew is out, and now all the pressure is on the AD Mitch Barnhart to see who he's going to land and who is the big fish that is going to take the Kentucky job. See, because of my interaction with Big Blue Nation over the last few days and how Twitter is now wired with the algorithms, I have seen so many Kentucky accounts that I didn't even know existed before this week just pop up on my timeline. And in the last 3 or 4 hours, there was a serious momentum push from Big Blue Nation about Dan Hurley landing at Kentucky. Now, let me be clear, and I have laughed at this notion from the start. There is a difference in wanting Dan Hurley and then actually getting Dan Hurley. I've always thought there was a big, fat, zero chance that Dan Hurley was going to leave UConn after back-to-back championships to take a job even as prestigious as the Wildcats of Kentucky are. But there was this idea that Mitch Barnhart was going to at least make him say no to his face, and they were going to offer him a king's ransom, a ridiculous contract. Well, any idea of Dan Hurley taking the UConn job or taking the Kentucky job can be laid to rest, because Matt Norlander, covers college basketball for CBS Sports, just tweeted this out. There was little doubt as is, but this is final. Sources just told CBS Sports there is a 0% chance Dan Hurley will leave UConn for Kentucky. It's not happening. Hurley is staying in Storrs with a deserved big pay bump coming for him plus his staff. The UK's search continues. And not the United Kingdom. We're talking about the University of Kentucky. So, where do you go from here? And I think the AD has not been talked about enough nationally, the longtime AD. He had a bad, ugly relationship, especially towards the end, with John Calipari. I understand that it's probably the best thing for Kentucky to bring in a new coach. But when you basically force Cal out or made Cal realize, and I know Cal left for Arkansas, that this was not going to have a good ending in Lexington, you have to deliver on a big-name coach. You have to deliver on a coach that's going to be met with universal praise. I know that some people are pushing back on Scott Drew. Scott Drew would have been a home run hire. Scott Drew would have been an A++++ hire. Nate Oates would have been an A-plus hire. Both of those guys would have been perfect. Obviously, Dan Hurley would have been the creme de la creme name. Jay Wright would have been the creme de la creme name. Those two guys. Jay Wright was never taking the job. Dan Hurley was never taking the job. Nate Oates has already made it clear he's staying at Alabama. And now we know Scott Drew is staying in Waco, Texas. So, I could be like every other Tom, Dick, and Harry, and I could sit here and talk about Billy Donovan. We all know Billy Donovan is interested in the job, I think. Doesn't mean he's going to take the job. But when you do this, and I could say this now, for as long as I have, I'm pretty good in dissecting coaches speak. And when I heard Billy Donovan the other night before the Bulls played the Knicks talk about the Kentucky job for 5 minutes, and talk about how happy he is in Chicago and how committed he is to the Chicago Bulls for right now, you didn't really believe, or you didn't emphatically hear him say he won't be the head basketball coach at Kentucky. Now, there are some tricky parts of this. Number one, it's safe to say you could argue it's a better lifestyle to be an NBA head coach now than a college basketball coach. Fully agree with that. Number two, Billy Donovan is going to be in the play-in tournament. The longer and longer you wait with the transfer portal, name, image, and likeness, and the window closing and all that stuff, it makes it complicated to form a really good team, even with you being Kentucky. Especially when you know Cal is going to be plucking from the guys that he was supposed to be bringing into Kentucky now when Cal literally does not have a roster at Arkansas. So you have to not rush a decision, but you do have to move rather quickly. And I'm okay waiting for Billy Donovan, but you can't be left at the altar. Like, if you're going to wait for Billy Donovan, Mitch needs to know that Billy is taking the gig. Even if he doesn't say it publicly, you need to be assured privately that if we wait for you, Billy, you're going to take the gig. And I don't know if Billy Donovan will take the gig. I don't. I think he's interested, but I don't know if he will actually take it. Personally, I hope he does. Because Billy Donovan isn't winning squat in the NBA. He's not winning a championship. We know that this was his first assistant job in college, was at Kentucky all those years ago. And he's been, right, the hot name for Kentucky in the past. But this will be the last time Billy Donovan will be a hot name for Kentucky. So Billy has to ask himself this, assuming the Wildcats come calling. Can I live with myself saying no? Because if you say no, they're not going to come calling again because your ship, even though as great as you've been, being a two-time national winning coach, a national championship winning coach at Florida, the older you get and how many times you turn them down, there's not going to be a fourth or a fifth time to turn them down. So if you're fine with the Kentucky ship sailing and you not being a part of it as the head coach, then you turn them down. But I don't know if he'll be able to say no. So I don't really have a great feel one way or another if Billy Donovan's going to be the coach. But I asked this to Matt Jones from Kentucky Sports Radio earlier in the week. And I said, Matt, just, you know, entertain me here for a second. We know Jay Wright's not coming. We know Dan Hurley's not coming. Let's say Scott Drew and Billy Donovan both pass up on the job. Who does then Kentucky target? And Matt said that he's heard that Sean Miller could be a name of interest. He also said that another potential name of interest could be Shaka Smart. He even talked about Tommy Lloyd from Arizona as well, and Chris Beard, who's currently at Ole Miss. I'll give another name. And I will say that this should be the next Kentucky coach if Billy Donovan says no. And it's Bruce Pearl. Bruce Pearl has the exuberant, big-time feel that Kentucky needs. He has had an enormous amount of success in college basketball. I know he had scandals, right? That's well documented. But since getting to Auburn, he did take them to a Final Four. And don't tell me just because Bruce Pearl is at Auburn doesn't mean he can't jump ship in the SEC. We just had Cal go from Kentucky to Arkansas. So if Cal could go from Kentucky to Arkansas, Bruce Pearl can absolutely, positively go from Auburn to Kentucky. And I would just assume, and you know what happens when you assume, but if Bruce Pearl gets a call from Kentucky and they say, Coach Pearl, we want to make you the next men's basketball coach at Kentucky, I don't think he's saying no. I don't think he's saying no whatsoever. So as we see this search playing on out, Jay Wright, no. Dan Hurley, no. Nate Oates, out. Scott Drew, out. If Billy Donovan doesn't get offered the gig, or if Billy Donovan says, I'm staying with Chicago, this then creates a crazy search. And that next name that I would call on up would be Bruce Pearl. But man, it's crazy how we're even at this right now, where you knew that Dan Hurley and Jay Wright weren't serious candidates. I thought Nate Oates would be in play. Nate Oates said, thanks, but no thanks. Scott Drew was the surprising domino. And we are one domino away. And we don't know what's fan interest and what's reality from Billy Donovan being out. And think about that. That would be the five most highly coveted names, realistic or not, for Kentucky. And when you get into them, what would be the sixth name, you could give me a bevy of answers. Because like Matt said, he talked about Sean Miller, Tommy Lloyd, Shaka Smart, Chris Beard. He didn't even mention Bruce Pearl. I'm mentioning Bruce Pearl. So Kentucky, we all know, is a major job. But the candidates right now that we thought would be major candidates are all like, thanks, but no thanks. So it looks ugly right now, but that's because you don't know who the guy is. But ultimately, Mitch is going to be judged, even though he's been there for a long time, based on this hire. Because it ended ugly with Cal, even though it was best to move on from Cal, and Cal did you a favor. You can't just hire Joe Schmo here. And right now, Kentucky is on the dating app. And people look at Kentucky, and there's a few coaches that you thought, okay, like we know Kentucky is the good-looking person on the dating app. You thought there'd be a few other coaches that would be swiping right. Right? They'd be swiping, yes, I'm in on Kentucky. Instead, they're swiping the other way. And now we're going to have to wait and see who ends up matching with Kentucky. And that, to me, is fascinating. Samter, go ahead.
So why do you think all these, like, why all these coaches are saying no to Kentucky? Someone in the newsroom earlier said to me that Kentucky's basically the Alabama of college basketball. They're probably the bluest of the blue bloods. Like, if you think about the number one program in all of college basketball, you think UNC, you think Kansas, you think Duke, you think UConn, you think Kentucky. But I think Kentucky, from the history and the fan base, Kentucky might be like the number one program in all of college basketball.
So here's
the thing. Why are all these guys saying no?
Two things. I'll answer on the back end, but let me just say this from the front. I understand what you're saying, Kentucky and Alabama, but Kentucky hasn't had the recent success. Like when Alabama was open with Nick Saban, they're coming off this great run that was still humming. But for Kentucky, they haven't won a championship in their standard in a long time. Like, Cal was there, what, 15 years in year three? He won his championship. And then a few years after that, got to another championship. Since then, they haven't been back to another championship game. So I don't know if that plays a factor into it, but it's really only one candidate that was realistic so far has said no. I think we can agree, right, Samter? Jay Wright wasn't realistic. Dan Hurley wasn't realistic. Actually, two. And it depends on what you read with the reporting on Nate Oates. So, really, the two names that we thought could have been in play and that were legit candidates, Nate Oates and then Scott Drew. Scott Drew said no, and whether Nate Oates' no was actually with interest of Kentucky or not, we don't know. But now it's okay. If you don't get Billy Donovan, then you got to go to the next tier. And you should be able to get the top name in the next tier, and for me, that would be Bruce Pearl. All right, it is Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We gear up for the NFL Draft, which is 2 weeks away. Darius Robinson had a fantastic season at Missouri, and he's going to join us when we return in 5 minutes.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, everyone, this is Brett Boone. Would you know it? I've got a podcast going strong in our fourth year. Tune in as I sit down with my friends, some of the biggest names in sports, media, entertainment, for a lot of fun and in-depth conversations. As you know, baseball's been my life. It's been in the family for a long time, but it's a lot more than that here. It's sort of like taking a ride in a golf cart around a beautiful track. Join me every week for multiple episodes on the Brett Boone Podcast, available on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Missouri football had a heck of a year this past season, and a big reason why is because of their defensive star, Darius Robinson, and the NFL draft, which he'll be a part of, is now 2 weeks away, and he's kind enough to join us right now on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Darius, appreciate the time. Thanks so much for doing this. How you been?
I've been great, man. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing fantastic. So we're 2 weeks away from the first round of the NFL draft. I see your name keep on popping up in a bunch of the mock drafts that I read to be a first-round pick. Just take me through the emotions that you're feeling as this NFL dream becomes a reality 2 weeks from now.
Yeah, I'm just feeling really excited, but focusing on my process and each day when I'm working out and training, just be better than I was yesterday. Because, you know, a lot of this stuff is out of my hands now, and I just control what I can control. And just keep holding on to the rope. We got 14 more days, man.
Is it weird? Because you were at Missouri for a while, and now you're getting ready to be an NFL player. Is it weird that the Missouri chapter is now officially over for you?
Yeah, it's weird saying I used to go to Mizzou or former Missouri. Yeah, it's weird because Missouri will always be my home and my first love, honestly. And but yeah, Mizzou's been great to me, and I always tell people I'm from Michigan and I'm from Missouri.
Well, the building process that you guys did go through the last few years was very special, and you put a little cherry on top of the sundae with how you guys finished off this season and the great season that it was. Just how do you kind of reflect, and how do you look through the hard work to make it possible to have a season that Mizzou just had this past year?
Yeah, really, it starts with all my teammates. Everybody in the organization was committed to something to prove. That was our mindset all year, and each day we were bought in to be better than we were the day before, and that's why we were able to win 11 games and finish number 8 in the country. But it was a lot of hard work, a lot of tough seasons before, but like you said, glad we're able to finish strong.
Darius Robinson here with us. So a lot of mock drafts have you as a first-round pick. I see some have you as a second-round pick. Let's pretend I'm a general manager right now with the first-round pick. Why should I be taking you coming up two Thursday nights from now?
Yeah, you should take me because I'm the best defensive lineman in the draft. I could play a 0 from the 9, but better, I'm a better teammate. I'm a two-time captain of my team, a low-ego, high-output guy, and is always going to put the team first.
A lot of people talk about your versatility, and I know if I ask you, how do you envision yourself playing in the NFL, you'll probably tell me, however the team that drafts me wants me to play, but ideally, if it was your choice, how do you kind of envision your role being in the NFL?
Yeah, I would envision it in a 4 down front. I would like to play a 5 or play an end or come inside and play a 3 technique. But if we're playing a 3 down front, I would like to play a 4-eye or I'll play a stand-up 9. So whatever the team needs me to do, you know, I'm really honing myself on just being a technician. So it's all about – the alignment doesn't really matter to me. It's about making sure my hands are always inside, playing with a high motor and being fast and violent. I'm just a football player, man. I love to compete.
Love that answer. Darius Robinson here with us on the Zach Gelb Show. So your name really started to pop off at the Senior Bowl. Now, with all that being said, a lot of people knew who you were. Like, if you were a college football fan and you watched Missouri and you saw the tape, we know the player that you could be. And that's why I can't stand a little bit about this draft process is, you know, you go have a good Senior Bowl, you go have a good combine, then your name just goes all the way up on these draft boards where if people actually watch you, your name should have been there to begin with. So how do you kind of reflect and where, yeah, it's nice to get that praise, but I'm sure part of you is probably saying like, where's this praise been all these years?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing going to Mizzou. I don't know what Mizzou did to the world, but it just happens a lot of times. But nah, man, I just worry about being the best player I can be, man. Like I told you, I just stick to my process. And I knew over time and the national media attention, it'll take off. But that's why, for me, it's all about my process and working out, getting my runs and getting my D-line working. So whatever opportunity I get, you know, I'm willing to dominate, you know. So that's all I think about and just excited to see what team I end up on.
Who have been some of the teams that you've had the most conversations with, just wondering, Darius?
Honestly, it's been a lot. I met with about pretty much everybody at the Senior Bowl. I had 18 formals at the combine, and I had 12 top 30 visits. So it's kind of a variety of different teams around the league, but just really excited to see how it plays out.
I know you grew up in Michigan, like you said. I'm just wondering, what kind of football fan were you as a kid?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a tough question because it's like whichever. For me, I never picked Michigan, Michigan State. It was honestly whoever was having the best year. Like I can think back to when Michigan State played Alabama in the Sugar Bowl. That was a big deal. And then, you know, Michigan is always playing in a big bowl game. So honestly, whoever was the best team at the time, I was a fan of.
Who are some guys just wondering in the league right now that you're close with that maybe, you know, I guess the right word would be mentor, that kind of mentor you through this process?
Yeah, I would say my best friend, Isaiah McGuire, he's on the Cleveland Browns. He got drafted last year and just seeing how he went through his process. And we actually had the same agent, so it kind of worked out great. And I also say I've recently heard from Max Crosby, who's definitely giving me a lot of feedback and a lot of things that I can continue to work on in my game and, you know, continue to find ways to get better.
Now, that's one of the best. That's pretty damn cool. How'd that connection start with Max Crosby?
Yeah, it happened through my mentor, Rob Marinelli. He's a Hall of Fame, yep, legendary line coach. So then he introduced me to Max, and then we just always stayed in touch, and especially during this process. But it's just been a wonderful opportunity to be able to be in communication with a guy of that caliber. And that's why I said I'm just excited for this process. But at the end of the day, like the draft stuff is important, but I got to get back to my football skills and hone in on my process each and every day.
How are you going to spend the draft? Just wondering.
Yeah, I'll be at the draft. I got invited. You know, it's down in my hometown, so I'll be at the draft, and we'll see how everything plays out, but I'm very excited.
That's pretty cool, right? With the draft being in Detroit. And, you know, let's assume you hear your name in the first round. Like, I can't even imagine how you kind of keep calm in the next 2 weeks with that buildup and being able to have your family all in attendance.
Yeah, that's why I say, man, I just got to keep working out and keep my mind off of it. You know, it can go really well. Well, no matter what happens, first, second round, it's going to be a blessing to be invited to the venue or the opportunity. But, you know, that is the goal, to hear my name on day one. But just excited and just trying not to overthink it. But it's going to definitely, when I get there, really sink in. And, you know, really, I'm really here in my hometown.
In your college career, I'm sure you're always confident you could make it to the NFL one day. But to potentially be a first-round pick, when was the first time that kind of floated into your head, okay, there's a serious chance I could be one of the first 32 picks in the draft?
After my fourth year, I thought about leaving school, but I knew if I was going to come back, I was going to come back and be the best player in my position group and really buy into that mindset each and every day. And through spring ball, fall camp, and then as the season, I feel like each time people watch me, just keep getting better and better. And that's all my goal, be better than I was the day before. So, like I said, I knew it was a reality probably at the beginning of this, when I decided to come back to school. So, January of 2024.
Let me keep it in the SEC with you, Darius Robinson. Jaden Daniels, what is it like going up against him and preparing for him?
Yeah, he's the best player in the draft right now, honestly. He's the best player I ever played against. You watch the tape, he can do anything, everything he want to do. So he's a great player.
You think he's better than Caleb Williams?
I don't think it's Caleb Williams, but I have been in the SEC for 5 years, and I can't compare Jaden to anybody else. So if we say the SEC is the best conference in football, then I think that kind of answers it. But at the same time, I mean, Caleb Williams is like Caleb Williams. So, and, you know, I might be teammates with one of these guys. So but I personally play against Jaden Daniels. So I know, I know about it.
We know the arm that he has, and then he could also kill you with his legs too. Just, you know, that experience when you're in a locker room trying to prepare for him, what's going through your mind to try to slow him down and contain him?
Basically, rush with vision, get after. If you watch the LSU tape, I had a lot of good rushes, but he seen me and it was just too late. Took off, but you got to contain him in the rush. Find ways to win. The teams that beat him, I'd be curious to watch their tape and see how they played him. But I feel like we had a great game plan. He just beat us. So it's okay. You know, we live and learn, and, you know, hopefully I can either be on his team or, you know, get another tackle or sack against him, you know, but just really excited for this opportunity for the both of us.
Well, good luck. Appreciate the time today. Thanks so much. And we'll catch up with you again soon.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much.
You got it. There he is. Darius Robinson had a monster career at Missouri, as that program is now in a good spot. And we can't wait to see where his name's going to be called in the draft. 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. We did start the show talking about Scott Drew not leaving Baylor to take the Kentucky job. He's going to stay with the Baylor Bears. Now we're wondering who's going to be the next head coach of Kentucky. A lot of people will turn their attention to Billy Donovan. If Donovan isn't interested or they don't want to wait, with knowing that it won't be a Jay Wright, it won't be Dan Hurley, it won't be Nate Oates, and now it won't be Scott Drew, I suggested that Kentucky should place a phone call to Auburn's coach, Bruce Pearl, and try to pluck him from within the SEC and make him the next head coach of the Wildcats. Let's go to Oliver in Texas. He's next up on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Oliver, what's happening?
Hey, Zach. Thanks for letting me on. So I'm a Baylor grad, so it's been quite a tumultuous 48 hours, I guess you could say. But I'm just intrigued because it seems to me that Scott Drew has been ingrained in the Waco community for two decades plus. So my question to you is, do you think that this is more of a testament to what Baylor has done as a program to get themselves back onto the national powerhouse level? Or is this a testament to what Kentucky is doing and how this is kind of a bad look for them that Scott Drew turned them down for Waco? Do you think it's more of a testament to Waco or more of a testament to Lexington?
You know, I haven't thought about it that way. I don't think Scott Drew didn't take the job because he looked at Kentucky and was like, it's Kentucky. Like, I think Scott Drew, with the basketball family that he comes from, understands the rich tradition and the powerhouse that is Kentucky. Like, when Louisville was available, even though Louisville has a rich tradition, they're not in a good spot now. I never thought Drew was seriously going to consider Louisville. I thought if he was ever going to leave, it would be for Kentucky. So I guess to answer your question, and thanks for the phone call, Oliver, I would say that it's probably more so of a positive about what Scott Drew has been able to do at Baylor, and the circumstances that he took over were, once again, you know, you had a player murder another player. Like, that job was in the worst spot it could be. And for him to come in and to not only save the program, but then consistently win 20-plus games a year with not the greatest of resources, and to be able to win a championship, that's tough when you put in 20 years of work. And not everyone goes and just takes the biggest bag of cash and goes to the biggest job that they can. So he's so ingrained in the community, right? His kids have grown up there. His family has grown up there. And he's a legend there. It's not easy to leave. But now I will say, I don't consider Scott Drew a candidate for any other job now. Because if you're not leaving Kentucky, leaving Baylor to go to Kentucky, then you're never leaving. Unless things get really ugly. But I don't think things will ever get really ugly in Baylor where people are going to say, oh, let's fire Scott Drew because what he's done for that university. All right, it is Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We'll take a timeout. When we come on back, the GOAT, Tom Brady, is hinting already at a return to the NFL? Yeah, that's right. We got audio for you. We'll play it for you on the other side. Update time first, though. Here is Dexter Henry. This portion of the show is sponsored by the new Hyundai Tucson, available with complimentary class-leading BlueLink Plus. Now it's easy to use your phone to control your Tucson. So Ipe Mezuhara, the longtime, now former interpreter for Shohei Ohtani, has been charged with stealing more than $16 million from Shohei Ohtani, according to federal investigators. According to federal investigators, Shohei Ohtani had no knowledge of any of this. So here is some more from front office sports. We'll get to the Brady sound in just a second, but I just want to get this out there. Ipe Mezuhara's account placed about 19,000 wagers between December 2021 to January 2024, according to the complaint. The average wager was about $12,800. His largest wager was about $160,000. The smallest wager was $10. See, he's like us all. We've all placed some $10 bets. The total losing bets, everyone's seated right now. Stu seated, Samter seated, I'm seated. The total losing bets for Ipe Mezuhara, $182.9 million. I sound like Dr. Evil there for a second. And the net losses were $40.7 million. This is crazy. And you know what's still nuts to me, Samter? The FBI went out of their way to say and make it clear that Shohei Ohtani had no involvement in this. Now, I have not read the entire story, but can I just ask a simple question? How? How didn't Ohtani not know about any of this? And for Major League Baseball, since this is now the information that the money was actually stolen from Ohtani, did you hear that exhale let out of New York City? That was from Rob Manfred. He is so happy, because I would have loved to have seen Rob Manfred try to continue to put Ohtani on the field if Ohtani knew, and if any bets on Major League Baseball were being placed, and if this pressure was really turned up on Rob Manfred, I would have loved to have seen him stutter through an entire press conference and just have verbal diarrhea coming from the mouth with Rob Manfred, because he is a terrible, and I mean a terrible, commissioner, and as we know, a public speaker. But I don't know, maybe I'm naive here, Samter. It seems like from a sports standpoint and from what we care about and Ohtani's involvement and will he be able to be on the field, it seems like this story practically from our coverage standards is pretty much over with. And it's wild how quickly we found out about this story and how serious this story was. And the big question was always Ohtani's involvement. And now it kind of seems from a sports perspective, poof, Yeah, we react to it. Yeah, it's a compelling story. But does anyone at the end of the day actually care from a baseball standpoint about Ipe Mezuhara? And also, how is not a single bet placed on Major League Baseball? That to me is still the crazy part. You were in this much debt, and I haven't read anything that said that he has bet on Major League Baseball. So I'm assuming that's still true. But you were in this much debt where you had to allegedly steal $16 million from Shohei Ohtani, or more than $16 million. And if you're trying to chase bets to try to get you back into the green and into the clear, you wouldn't bet on something that you're around every day? That, to me, is the crazy part of this entire story, Santer.
Yeah, it's hard to believe it. Maybe the fact that this report is coming out from the government as opposed to from MLB makes it slightly more believable. But it really
I have to take it for what it is. Like, yeah. I don't see why the feds would lie here. I don't see why the feds would cover up for Major League Baseball or Ohtani or Mezuhara.
Exactly. So it feels more believable, but it also still feels unbelievable.
Yes.
Right?
100%.
Like they put were it this way. Close. They spent so much time together. I know that, like, you know, you don't know everything going on in the people that you're close with, but you know enough that if this is happening, something's going on. Well, and it's just the fact that Ipe came out with that initial story, then backtracked after speaking to Ohtani's people. It feels very questionable
about
what
shady.
Ohtani knew and did not know.
Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. Like, I understand these two were considered like best friends. And I know we don't consider each other best friends, but we have a very good relationship professionally. And then, you know, we're also friends. So it would be like with how much time I spend with you, talking about the show, either in person or via text messages or things like that. If you were in a situation, Santa, where you were $16 million in debt, or you had to take $16 million, is the way to say it, from me. And so, like, first off, I would know because, A, I don't have $16 million to give you, but let's just pretend like we did. And, you know, I didn't have someone checking my finances. But just from an emotional state, being around someone that knows they have this hanging over their head, how Ohtani never asked about it, or how Ipe never just blew some steam off his chest about what's going on. Like, that, from a human standpoint, that's what makes it unbelievable. Because, like, we've all gone through crap, right? And how many times, Samter, have I said things to you in passing, or you said things to me in passing, but, like, personal things. And even if you don't give the whole information, like, if Samter walks in here in a bad mood or something happened at Samter's home or something like that, it's not that difficult to understand something is up, even if Samter didn't say, hey, here's X, Y, and Z. And when you have to go to the lengths to steal from the guy that basically gives you your main source of income, because without Ohtani, you don't have this job, and Ohtani never realized something was up, or Ipe Mezuhara never said something to him, I just don't understand how that's possible. I don't. And when you go through the tracking of the money, anything, and how much he allegedly stole, like, it's crazy. And even though I have to trust the federal investigation, it is surreal to me. And you're right, it's not believable, but the information is the information, that Ohtani has been, like, totally cleared in all of this. So I guess that's the dead end of this story now. And if there's more information, we'll give it to you. But from a sports consumer standpoint, man, all the air has been let out of this balloon.
So here's a question. Coming from our standpoint in the media and wanting to fill time and talk about interesting things, are you happy that this story ended up being kind of a dud?
Yes.
Or are you disappointed that it kind of fell flat and now we're just kind of done with it?
Well, and I said this from the start. The only time that this story would overtake the sports world is A, if Ohtani knew, and if they were betting on baseball. So from everything I read, they weren't betting on baseball, and Ohtani had no knowledge. So for me, this story goes away. And now we could get back to watching Ohtani's greatness and not having this cloud over it of what is genuine and then what was misleading to us.
So So I guess my question is watching Ohtani's greatness more interesting and entertaining for you than talking about the fall of Ohtani?
Well, I'm not sitting here and, like, I don't want to sit here and root for Shohei Ohtani be throwing games. Like, who's the guy? Porter?
Jonathan Porter.
Like, he's irrelevant. But when there's something out there where the unders on his points, and it was like the most action, and a lot of people are betting on his unders, it's a compelling story. But I don't sit there and say, oh, I hope that this guy was talking to X, Y, and Z and he was throwing games, because that ruins the integrity of sports. I can't sit there, even though it'd be fun to talk about, I can't sit here and say that's what I'm rooting for.
And not necessarily that he was throwing games per se, but just that maybe, like, you know.
No.
Banned or suspended or something major happening.
No, because it sucked for baseball.
Yeah.
Baseball has enough marketing problems as it is.
Sucked for baseball. I think it would have been great for us.
I see, that's where a lot of people have distrust now with the media, because I don't root for the negative story. I don't sit here and say, yeah, let's have Ohtani involved in this gambling scandal. So I'm not going to continue that part of the conversation. Anyway, let me get to Tom Brady. He was on Deep Cut with Vic Blends, and this is Tom Brady about maybe returning to the NFL one day.
Let's say one day there's a situation, right? Maybe it's the 49ers, maybe, you know, heading to the playoffs, offense is great.
Patriots, somebody, Raiders, look, could be, you never know.
God forbid somebody goes down, would you pick up that phone?
I'm not opposed to it. If they would, I don't know if they're going to let me if I become an owner in the NFL team, but I don't know if, I don't know. I'm always going to be in good shape. I'll always be able to throw the ball. So to come in for a little bit, like MJ coming back, I don't know if they let me, but I wouldn't be opposed to it.
Well, here's the part where they wouldn't let you. If he ends up becoming a minority owner of the Raiders, they would not let him return to play quarterback. The other owners would not approve of that. But here's why I call, as the kids would say, cap on Tom Brady. He was offered and seriously pursued by the 49ers, his hometown team, this past offseason. I know it would not have been, oh, you just parachuted in December. He would have had to play the full season. But if you didn't take it then, that makes me think you're actually done. And who knows? I thought he was sarcastic. Remember that audio that we played a few months ago when he was like, yeah, I was about to make a return, and then my friends threw me a surprise retirement party, and my family did. And once you have the surprise retirement party, you can't come on back. I thought that was in jest. Maybe it wasn't. But come on, Brady. You're throwing out the Patriots. You're throwing out the Raiders. Like, the Patriots are going to be nowhere close to contention. Stu, we don't even know the Raiders quarterback, Gardner Minshew. Like, come on. I know he had a successful season this past year, but give me a break. But a team like the 49ers or the Eagles, like, they lose their quarterback in December and they give him a call. Yeah, I guess he would consider it. But I have already come to the line of thinking, and I've already gone to this place, that Tom Brady's playing days are over, they're done, and they're finished. But him entertaining that, actually, it annoys me. Even being the biggest Tom Brady fan on the planet, and him being my favorite athlete of all time, it's like, stop with the drama here. You retired, you came back, and then you retired. TB12, it's over. You're done. The playing career is over. Fox, broadcasting, and maybe becoming a minority owner of the Raiders. And then doing all the business ventures that you have with all those fancy schmancy smoothies that you recommend people to drink. It is Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. Kyle Tucker, who covers the Kentucky Wildcats, will join us coming up in about 25 minutes. When we come on back, why Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels need to be the first and second pick in the NFL draft.
Hey everyone, this is Brett Boone. Would you know it? I've got a podcast going strong in our fourth year. Tune in as I sit down with my friends, some of the biggest names in sports, media, entertainment, for a lot of fun and in-depth conversations. As you know, baseball's been my life. It's been in the family for a long time, but it's a lot more than that here. It's sort of like taking a ride in a golf cart around a beautiful track. Join me every week for multiple episodes on the Brett Boone Podcast, available on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.